Welcome to the Wellbeing Ignites Well-Doing podcast, produced by OOT Social Health, where the focus is on exploring the essential elements that drive organizational success, human-centric leadership. Hosted by Adjoa Boahidi, principal of AKB Talent Edge.
Welcome to the Wellbeing Ignites Well-Doing podcast. My name is Tiagi Delanrol, and I'm your host today. Joining me is Simon Trevarthan, Interim CEO of TRIAC. We're going to be speaking about building inclusive, future-ready organizations. We'll be exploring Simon's expertise in strategic transformation, workforce innovation, and leadership development. This episode will focus on how organizations can create inclusive, resilient, and future-ready workplaces by embracing innovation, fostering leadership, and leveraging AI as well as digital tools. Simon is a visionary leader in transformation, strategy, and innovation with over two decades of experience driving organizational change, culture shifts, and human-centric leadership. Simon Trevarthan is the interim CEO of the Toronto Region Immigrant Employment Council, a nonprofit committed to fast-tracking newcomers in careers, helping employers find great talent and solving the challenges of skilled immigrant unemployment. He has also held executive positions in innovation as the Chief Innovation and Open Assets Officer in the post-secondary and health sectors. In these roles, he has fostered innovation, ecosystem that mobilize industry and community partnerships and enable a culture of disruptive innovation. Previously, he held leadership roles in the public sector, consulting, and industry. A passionate storyteller, strategist, and innovator, Simon believes innovation starts with creating sparks, but are turned through action into value. Global in viewpoint, but local in impact, he has an executive consultant and speaker. He has been in Africa and the Middle East, as well as Europe and North America. Simon has also worked as a journalist and international spokesperson for major humanitarian organizations in conflict zones. In today's episode, we're going to be diving into how organizations can embrace transformation and innovation to stay competitive, why human-centric leadership is essential in the age of AI and digital disruption, and the role of inclusive hiring and workplace development in shaping the future of work. Welcome, Simon. So nice to have you.
Thank you. So glad to be on the show.
Well, at the Employee Wellbeing Council, we believe in being very human-centric. So we want to actually begin with a couple Proust-inspired questions. And the very first one is, which talent would you most like to have?
Oh, that's a great question. Infinite creativity.
Okay.
I think it's the genesis of what makes us human. It's the genesis of what helps us create and go forward as individuals, but also as a society.
That's a fantastic talent to have, right? Especially as it relates to innovation. So the next question is a little bit different. If you were to die and come back as a person or thing, what would it be?
Die and come back as a person thing. I think interesting question. As an animal, I think this, having done some work in Africa, I'm always amazed by elephants and their ability to make incredible families and their ability to remember and their ability to have so many human emotions. So definitely that would be the animal. To come back as a person in a different life, it would be as a painter.
Okay.
It's one of those mediums where we translate emotions. And if you're good at it and do it well, it communicates those emotions to other people that they connect with, and it speaks to our human condition.
Wow. I love that. And it kind of ties back with your original answer as well with regards to which talent you'd like to have as well, right? In terms of being creative. So it allows you to express your creativity in a really beautiful way, right? That helps move people through art. All right. So let's get into a little bit of your background and leading transformation specifically at TRIAC and really unlocking workforce potential. Now, you were recently appointed as the interim CEO at TRIAC to lead the organization's transformation and expand its impact. What are your biggest priorities in helping skilled immigrants integrate into Canada's workforce? And what innovative approaches are you looking to implement?
That's a wonderful question. You know, I think it starts with newcomers themselves and how do we as an organization support them in actually getting careers in their given specialty or skill. And we recognize there's barriers to employment, there's barriers, regulatory barriers, but there's also kind of social and cultural barriers, workplace barriers. So I think firstly is a recognizing where and who are immigrants today, particularly skilled immigrants and newcomers. And thinking about them as a demographic, you know, it's roughly 25 to 35, highly skilled, coming from people with qualifications, with experience. And the question then is, how do they both interact? How do they communicate? But also, how are they interacting with the workforce and opportunities? And I think that's a starting point to understand how we as an organization respond to that and provide services and interventions that are meaningful to them. The other piece of that question is really understanding employers. And employers are not some generic group, but they can be divided by sectors, but also can be divided within those sectors into certain specialities. And responding to what is the highest growth areas in the economy, because there's areas growing and therefore there are needs growing, and those not necessarily correlating with the groups and the talents of immigrants that are coming through. So again, finding those connection points and weaving them together. And I think that's kind of the essence of what we think in terms of trying to find innovative solutions enabled by technology to help support immigrants fast-tracking newcomers into careers in those, particularly those high-growth sectors.
That's great. It's like really, from what I'm hearing, like having that awareness, right, of what are those high-growth sectors and really helping bridge those key kind of like gaps that you would need. And it sounds like TRIAC is working towards making sure that you find those kind of bridges and those kind of stepping stones for those immigrants that are coming into the workforce. It's really great work that you all do there. Okay, so let's get into, you know, AI. AI right now is a very hot topic with respect to how it's impacting innovation and human leadership. So with AI and digital transformation reshaping jobs, how can organizations build a future-ready workforce that embraces technology while maintaining a human-centric approach to leadership and inclusion?
That's a wonderful question. I think a couple things. Artificial intelligence is in its infancy, and what we're seeing today is kind of its potential. And knowing that, I think it's important to understand how we can tap and use it to actually further goals of a business or an occupation. I was at a conference recently, and it basically said, well, which kind of sectors and which kinds of industries are most at threat from AI? But also which ones can be enabled most by AI. And it's not a surprise that you can find particularly blue collar, kind of working with your hand sectors are probably the least potentially impacted by AI. Whereas white collar jobs, particularly white collar jobs, where there's repetitive work could be the most at risk. But they can also, those businesses can be the ones where AI can enable and empower those businesses to work smarter, work better, and work faster. Particularly in our work, there's the power of using AI, when I talked about the demographics too, of actually providing services that enable newcomers who are looking for a job or looking at advancement in their career, providing services, capabilities that enable them to kind of map that through quicker, grab information and digest it and deliver it, be that in learning, be that in interview kind of preparation, be that in terms of other skills, training and understanding and networking. So I think there's ways to build community with AI that we've not necessarily seen and get over some of those hurdles of isolation, navigation, but also kind of skills development. I recently saw an incredible piece of AI where you can feed in a job description and it will generate a interview, mock interviews based on that job description. So when you do get an interview, you can just up your game in terms of your interview skills. There was also in AI that can enable you to understand language and improve your language skills. So there's a whole host of these tools that can maximize your potential. And, you know, literally, it's the 5% compounded that actually make you a superb candidate and actually enable you both to get a role, but potentially succeed and thrive in that role too.
Yeah, that's great. I mean, it sounds like there's so many different targeted innovations as well, right? That's helping in key critical areas. And really, what I'm really seeing is around how it's almost making us superhuman in some ways, right? It's allowing us to reclaim time and spar with an intelligent, I think, a certain type of intelligence that allows us to also kind of up our game in terms of like how we can also think differently, elevate our consciousness. So we're not bogged down in the mire, right? Of doing the grunt type work. Okay. So, you know, right now diversity is key for a lot of different organizations. They're looking at different diverse talent pools, but oftentimes they still struggle with leveraging truly diverse talent pools as well. What strategies or innovations have you seen that successfully support immigrant and diverse workforce integration? And how can companies rethink hiring practices for the future?
That's a wonderful question. I mean, I think there's lots of ways you can unpack that from a cultural perspective, from how those cultures, workplace cultures, cascade into behaviors and norms, all the way to the hiring process, all the way to leadership and its selection of candidates, and equally to how organizations think about talent. Particularly in an economy which we're in, which is one of economic uncertainty, where really it's an employer's market because of the way we're situated. We have high unemployment in Canada, and we can assume that newcomers and unemployment is maybe even double of that. The question is then is how can, in the one side, can AI and other technologies and other interventions de-risk a candidate, whether they're a newcomer or not, and actually make them a more suitable candidate or a more verified candidate for a potential employer? And AI and other interventions, learning interventions, accreditation assessments, self-assessments, competencies, all of these kinds of tools can help essentially de-risk a hire, regardless of who they are, so that they appear to be a better candidate, or actually they can truly appreciate the talent, skills, and capabilities that candidate brings to the table. We've all been in processes, employment processes, where in very many cases, an employer will choose an internal candidate because they're a known commodity. And, you know, they're a low-risk hire in that regard, or promotional hire, because they're a known commodity. So I think any kinds of tools and interventions, we've done a lot of work in the mentorship space to help build those connections, again, to build and understand and kind of build that capability of the newcomer as a known commodity in that sector or space. So I think of a lot of ways we can use both high-touch tools, mentorship, coaching, leadership development, personal development. You know, these are all more high-touch, but AI can also assist in some of those other skills acquisitions or skills verification that enable you to actually, say, de-risk the hire, enabling them to get employment in this given sector.
Yeah, I love that. And it kind of also reminds me a little bit of just also building trust, right? Having those types of mentorship programs, I think it allows both parties to have a certain level of trust, potentially prior to employment, right? And kind of bridging that gap again that we spoke of earlier. Okay. So right now, there is a cultural shift from resistance to innovation. Like, we're going through this kind of paradigm shift right now, I think, in society at large. You've worked on large-scale transformation initiatives across industries. What are the biggest cultural barriers organizations face when adopting innovation and change? And how can leaders overcome resistance to transformation?
So at the outset, I think when you think about the question of resistance is, you know, if you face no resistance to change, it's essentially the status quo. So resistance in some ways is a good thing because it shows that you're actually disrupting the system, the complex system. If you face no resistance, then it's honestly the status quo. So all change is an element of disruption. It's a kind of a friction point that creates a new reality. The reason why people resist in many cases is the fear of that new reality, the uncertainty of that new reality. So I think there's a way to alleviate that. You can inspire people to the new reality, but you can also understand, well, what are their emotional forms of resistance that are not helping them make that leap to what the new reality may be it the embrace of a new technology, a new way of doing things, those kinds of things. So resistance isn't bad. It's a question of how you deal and unpack that resistance and have strategies to respond to the resistance in the correct way. Most resistance can be rational. We can't afford it. We can't do it. We don't have the capabilities. But a lot of us can be emotional. We don't feel, we're frightened by the change. We're frightened by the uncertainty, frightened about what it would mean to my job. And sometimes it can be personal. You know, there can be a personality rub as well. So that's when I think about resistance, I think about in those three kind of areas.
Mm-hmm.
And actually how you build a plan to move you forward. The other thing to think about, one of the other barriers in many organizations is there is often, particularly in large and complex structures, there's been a flood of ideas. People come to work with ideas, but so often they're not captured, or there's resistance from kind of the middle management in many cases, or even senior management to embrace new ideas. After all, management is about kind of juggling balls, finite resources. Leadership is actually working out which game we play. And so there's a tension in management because their roles are often very demanding of, you know, keeping the wheels on the bus. And actually, you want me now to change how we design the bus in flight? Doesn't work. So I think there's naturally that thing, that tension. But a key here is understanding there are ideas across and downwards through the organization. Sometimes humble, sometimes huge. So if you're going to embrace a culture of creativity, you need a way to capture ideas and enable ideas to bubble up and champion, and giving yourselves a pathway to turn ideas, which are just that, creative ideas, a pathway to actually turn them into either minimal viable products, pilots, or some sort of potential that we can see the future, whether it's worth investing in. So that's a key piece, understanding resistance, understanding where ideas ferment, but also where resistance can be in an organization. The last thing I would say is this, this is tied up with the question of when we talked about AI. It can be a threat to many organizations and many roles. It can also enable, and it's just one of those technologies out there. If we recognize that there are whole new sectors, there are whole new industries existing today that didn't exist 5-10 years ago, and if we realize there are new capabilities, the question for leaders is how do we embrace that new potential, capture that value, and bring that value into our organizations? Yes, we can do it faster, better, cheaper, but can actually fundamentally change the value proposition of how we work, our business model, and the value we can bring to the market. So the necessity there of actually transformation is entirely there. And it could be that you still remain a very high-touch retail B2C kind of world, but it could be that transforms aspects of your core processes that help you deliver quality in the marketplace.
Yeah, thank you so much for that. I think it really helps us better understand, right, that you need to have a little bit of resistance because you're then challenging the status quo and you're moving things along. And I loved what you said about having a way to capture, almost like having a repository of ideas and then having a way to kind of move those ideas along so that they eventually potentially turn into pilots or minimum viable products so that the innovation can continue to flourish. So great, great insights there.
I mean, I'm a great fan of Adam, I think it's Adam Clear's Atomic Habits and the beautiful idea of the compounding, right? So if you did one little change every day, 2% change, that actually those little incremental changes compound to an extraordinary amount of improvement. And sometimes those little incremental change can actually not have resistance because it's just a small improvement. But compounded across an organization, it can fundamentally transform the way it performs over a given period of time. Sometimes small changes can be tough to make. But sometimes if it's literally like kind of low risk, it actually can actually make substantive improvements in the future.
Yeah, that's so true. And it's key that leaders allow for at least those ideas to kind of form and to be captured and to, you know, to be nurtured. So it really boils down to, is the organization embracing creativity and innovation, right? Mm-hmm. And it stems with a lot of times with leadership. So speaking of leadership, we're going to talk a little bit about, you know, coaching versus commanding. Leadership today is shifting from a command and control model to a coaching and empowerment approach. What are the key mindset shifts leaders need to make to drive resilience, innovation, and impact?
I think from my humble understanding, I think one of the key things leaders do is set the aperture of acceptable or permissible ideas. And if the leader is limited, they have a set menu or way of approach, it can actually limit what is acceptable to be discussed and limit what we can actually do. And that those kind of strictures can actually limit what ideas are brought forward and what ideas that potentially can actually change the organization, change its business, and change its values. So leaders have a pivotal role in setting the culture and what ideas are accepted, embraced, but also what ideas are rejected in that case. So leaders have that critical role of giving permission to think, giving permission to explore, and giving permission for others to actually further develop their ideas into viable products and services. That's a critical piece of culture. And embracing that idea of value and creativity. Leaders also have a critical role in championing others and their capabilities and their talents. And I think that's a critical piece in the innovation kind of milieu and actually understanding what people bring to the table, not their job title, but the talents they bring to the table and championing those. Again, leaders set the barometer, the thermostat of what is acceptable in the organization, the culture. And I think that is that key piece is that leader is the enabler of innovation, not necessarily the leader of innovation. Mm-hmm. And it can be that they're there to kind of make the organization more courageous, to go further, to push further, and actually do the unimaginable and do something even beyond what we thought we could do. And so often it's like, let's do just something that works, but can we do something even greater that actually can be bolder, that can actually be inspiring, and actually can change or bring new disruptive innovation to the marketplace?
Yeah, it really boils down to like that, the coaching piece, right? Like if they feel that they can coach the best out of the employees that are, you know, really under their stewardship, right? And help guide them and guide the organization to new heights. I think it's very, very critical. So right now, as part of our discussion with respect to transformation, we also talk a lot about fatigue and burnout, right? Organizations often push continuous change, leading to burnout. And we spoke of resistance earlier. How can leaders ensure transformation efforts boost engagement rather than drain their employees? And what practical approaches can help them sustain their energy in these high change environments?
That's a great question. Big change takes a long time. And it's important to recognize, as other great leadership writers have done so, everyone's excited and inspired at the beginning. Everyone, it's exciting, it's going to be new, we've got people inspired to do great things. After that initial phase, and we actually start to launch, we're actually trying to implement, you will get into the messy middle, the dip in the middle, where things are going wrong, unexpected challenges result. It seems more difficult. There's fears, should we abandon? Should we cut our losses? Should we not go through with this? And then you will rise as you resolve those challenges into a new state, a new reality, which is probably a better one than when you start off. That's the point of the transformation. And I think the burnout often happens in that middle. And one of the reasons for that burnout is often in many cases where you have a big transformation and you're trying to implement it, you're relying on a small group, 20% of the people, it's true people who truly believe in what we are doing, to do 80% of the work around that transformation. Yes, there's people who are just keeping the organization, the operations going forward, but you're relying on a few key people to make that transition happen. They're extremely talented, highly committed, want to see this change through, but the weight of change is also falling on them. And I think one way to support them is to recognize that is probably going to be a smaller group pushing the change forward, being aware of where they are putting in the extra hours, the really hard hours to make the change happen. Understand they will need time away from the office to recharge, reconnect, and all those good things. But also recognizing what are the barriers they're coming up against, because they will face, similar to our early question, resistance. And many times the burnout is faced by resistance of other parts of the organization that are putting up barriers to how the change needs to be realized. As a leader, your role is to remove some of those barriers in the organization and continuously remove barriers to make this transition as smooth as possible. On a personal level, I think it's best to be attuned to what people's needs are. Everybody has different commitments of family and other pieces in their lives, and be attuned to those types of things. Burnout happens not as a single event, but accumulation of lots of stresses that are built up to a point that maybe is a tipping point when people really are in a bad state. So again, being attuned to the pressure that the organization, particularly a few people in that organization, are under, and where you can, relieving that pressure, making sure that their wellness is being kept in top of mind, and actually the health of that critical transformation team is actually driving forward as a team, and actually we are actually pushing forward with our goals. And most importantly, I think, celebrating and recognizing the incredible individual achievements of people working to the summit of their talents.
Yeah, that's so great. And it really ties in with the next question that we're going to ask, because you speak of the individuals, right? The humans that are part of the mix. So with respect to human-centric design and business transformation, how can organizations apply design thinking and service innovation to create a better employee experiences, customer engagement, and long-term business value?
That's a wonderful question. Let's start off with what is essentially human-centric design. It comes out of a philosophy of taking design principles around product design and extending those design principles into services and thinking through services as service offerings all the way to experiences. that an experience innovation, which is, again, another kind of area of innovation. What it comes down to in humble terms is walking in your customer's shoes, not just in terms of how they interact with the product, but the entire experience of interacting with your product, their entire experience of what it feels like to be part of your offering, system, product, service. Does it actually meet their needs today? Is it designed around, let's say, a persona which is out of sync with who your customer is today? Is it around the most human things, the simple, humble things that people noticed? A lot of this can be done in I've seen, and it doesn't have to be profound or expensive. A lot of this has been done in the healthcare space. We're actually humanizing the experience and actually taking away some of the fears. I mean, it's also understanding what are people's fears and barriers. I know that many of the kind of IT companies, you know, you could think of the big telecommunication companies or all retail stores that like at Best Buy and Apple, they know that people have fears about technology. And actually, how do you take away those fears of technology and humanize the experience? So their fears are reduced, their anxiety is reduced, and they're more willing to buy the product. And so I think human-centric design speaks not only to the interaction, if there's an interaction, the questions they ask and the answers they give. It's also the physical interaction, if it's a physical interaction or even an online interaction. And, you know, any other kinds of experiences. We all know when something just feels right. Sometimes it's the smallest things that people notice and they make it just an exceptional experience. And that's true for a customer, but it also can be true for an employee. And so I think the small things, recognition, particularly for employees, understanding where people are doing exceptional jobs actually matter. Those humanizing experiences that actually are what connects us to others and connects us to a product, connects us to a brand, and connects us to value in the marketplace.
Yeah. What I'm taking away from your comments is really around the little things, right, that all add up into this larger experience that both employees and customers can really feel over time. And it's about building that brand, right? What if you're building a brand, it's all the little things that add up to a feeling, a vibe that the company gives.
A small example of that luxury hotel brand chain, which is seen as a cut above all of the other kind of standard high quality 5-star hotels. And when they ask their guests, what do you love about our experience? And they expect to hear it's about the concierge experiences, it's about the bars and restaurants, it's about the valets, etc. And when they actually asked their customers, that was seen as the table stakes. It was the small things that this brand does that are seen as something exceptional. And one of the small things they do is allow guests, customers, to choose their pillow from a menu of pillows, how hard, soft, etc. you want it. And whether you fly into and stay in a hotel in Kuala Lumpur, Tokyo, or New York, that pillow you selected is on that bed ready to go. Why? Because if you come off a long flight and you're a business person, you actually want a good night's sleep. And how many of us don't feel comfortable, don't sleep well in an alien bed? A bed that is this new to them. So that small thing of enabling their customers to choose their pillow was one of the reasons they chose that hotel chain over another. And it's a small change, but actually had a profound impact in terms of their customer retention and the desires of the customers to recommend them.
Yeah, that is such a great example. And it really shows, you know, really understanding who your customer is, right? Like, if you know your customer is typically business folks that really need that good night's sleep, in order to function in meetings and what have you the next day, then it is so critical. But it's interesting how they almost mapped out what that individual is going through, right, in the periphery, in order to make their hotel stay that much more special. Such a great example. So, you know, at TRIAC, mentorship is, you mentioned, is one of the cornerstones of what your focus is. When you think of mentorship and coaches across sectors, what are the most important leadership skills that young professionals and emerging leaders need to thrive in today's world of uncertainty and disruption, but as it relates to even how you approach mentorship?
I think mentorship has, there are different kinds of mentorship and coaching. Some mentorship and coaching could be around a particular event. So helping you coach to land a position as a newcomer. There can also be mentorship or coaching, which actually is about a longer term engagement over many years. I've had mentors and coaches that have helped me think about myself, my leadership, and my next steps in my career, to help frame my career. So it can be short, it can be long term. The kind of mentorship we work with is helping talented newcomers and immigrants connect with a mentor in their industry. And it solves a couple of questions, problems, which is like having a network, helping them figure out a network in that given industry. Coming to a new country, you're starting maybe from scratch in terms of a professional network. It helps you understand and navigate that sector because there are subtleties and differences in a Canadian context as opposed to maybe from their home context. And the other thing to do is it also is about that coaching element of understanding how they can sharpen their value proposition and present themselves more effectively to a given employer in this working context. So again, has those three kind of elements, and that's what we try and accomplish in our mentorship approaches. I think as a leader, what it can do is, again, improves your leadership style. There's no doubt about that. It helps you be aware to different talents. And again, I think it helps you become a more inclusive leader as you are a mentor or a coach to different groups and different professionals. But it also is a binary relationship because you will be learning as much from your mentee as they will be from you. And so I think that kind of openness on both sides helps it to be a relationship that grows and potentially is a friendship over many years. And I think, you know, if you look at people who've had extraordinary careers, often they've had a series of key mentors that have helped them unpack certain crossroads in their careers and choose the direction that's actually going to lead them forward and actually take courageous and bold steps in their careers so they can actually thrive and prosper.
I love that. And I think that the whole concept of mentorship is it's wonderful for both sides, right? And I think, you know, we were speaking with Michelle Lau Torres, who's the chief learning officer for the city of Austin, and she spoke at great length about reverse mentorship. Mm-hmm. and kind of that symbiotic relationship that's really formed and the exchange of knowledge between the two parties, the mentor and the mentee. So thank you so much for that, Simon. We're nearing the tail end of our discussion today, and we want to rewind back time, right? Back to Simon when he was in his early 20s, when you're just starting off. So if you could give yourself one piece of advice, what would it be?
I think a key would be, and I've thought about this a lot, which is pick a direction, pick a career perspective, go deep in it, but then go broad and enhance your skills broadly. It's the classic example of building the I and then you build the T. Leadership is a T question. Expertise is an I question. But without that foundation of the I and spending years building that talent, it's the classic example of the 10,000 hours, right? is those hours are built in that eye, but then building the leadership in terms of those different kind of competencies, emotional intelligence, financial literacy, and all those things is as the T, helps you then think about how you emerge as a leader that is your style. The other piece to that is, I think, really having a profound understanding of who you are. I'm not sure I've unpacked that entirely. And the value and the unique value you can bring. And it's not about trying to fit into others and other perspectives, other roles, but what is something unique you can bring and harnessing that one thing so that you can be remarkable in the marketplace. And I think, you know, a lot of us build our careers around what opportunities we can find. And I think when I look back and see people who've really soared in their careers, they've found something they're really good at and they've just refined that skill and that capability.
That's great advice. You know, I've had an opportunity to interview many, many executives. And I think that's one of my favorite pieces of advice, right? The developing the eye and then broadening out and really developing that T and really honing your various leadership skills. That does take time. First, you need to have a bit of experience in something. And then you can really further develop your point of view, right? And hone in on your leadership skills. Thank you, Simon. This was really fantastic. It was wonderful getting to know you and hearing your insights. I think many in the audience are going to very much value your perspectives.
Thank you. It was great to be on the show.
Thank you for joining us on the Wellbeing Ignites Well-Doing podcast, brought to you by OOT Social Health. We hope today's conversation has sparked new insights and inspired you to prioritize well-being in your journey to organizational success. Remember, when well-being ignites, well-doing follows. Stay tuned for more episodes as we continue to explore the power of human-centric leadership. Until then, be well and lead with purpose.